services. And I thought I'd start us off with essentially an orientation to the materials and our budget structure. The document that I believe has been provided to you includes both base budget material and change items that are part of the official governor's budget recommendation. And those pages are all in white in the materials that you have before you. The other colored pages in the human services section of the book are those that we have inserted to provide some additional background that we thought may be useful as we go through the base budget, as well as the yellow pages having been provided at the request of the chair. Those particular items are details on each of the grants that the department manages, as well as administrative account level detail for each of our administrative accounts in the direct appropriation area. The materials at the front include a table of contents, followed by a transmittal letter, and then, as you can see by the table of contents, our budget is laid out by a series of what we call both programs and budget activities that are essentially aligned around subject matter that is administered or by the department. And as we go through those particular items, each deputy commissioner or assistant commissioner who is responsible for those subject areas will come before you to walk you through those particular program areas. I would like to take a moment as well to orient you to the materials toward the back of the book. It's an appendix that we've put together for your reference, including, and those are the green pages toward the back. And I'd like to take a moment just to walk through at a very high level the budget structure and some of the charts that outline our overall base budget, and then identify for you the other materials that are here for your reference at a later point in time. The first page that I'd like to cover is A1, titled Department of Human Services Biannual Budget Structure. And that is the green, the second page in the green material toward the back of the book. After we get through my sort of orientation here, we'll generally be proceeding in the order of the book for the most part, so we won't be flipping pages back and forth. So I apologize for moving around a bit here as we start. Again, page A1, which is the second page in the green section of the book. In human services, we have both administrative administrative accounts, as well as what we call grant accounts, or more program-oriented accounts. And as you can see by the material on page A1, our budget activities for program grants are split between forecast grants and non-forecast grants. Forecast grants are those programs for which, while an appropriation is required by the legislature, current law requires that the department provide services to individuals who meet the qualifications for those programs. And so if an individual enrolls in those programs, the department has incurred an obligation to pay for either the care or the services covered under that particular program, although it still requires that the legislature appropriate the resources for those programs. And those we often refer to as forecasted programs and include such things as our MFIP program, medical assistance, general assistance, medical care, and those sorts of programs. As you look at that particular row around forecast grants, you can see that they are organized within our budget by subject area, including those that most closely relate to children and economic assistance, to health care, and then to continuing or long-term care. The second grouping of program-type grants that we have are non-forecasted grants, again split by those subject areas, but these are grants for which the department must manage within a capped appropriation, often controlling enrollment or expenditures within those programs to live within that appropriation amount. Some examples that you might see here include the adoption assistance or relative custody assistance program, other grants that we manage, such as the alternative care program, and those are some examples that fall within those categories. And then the third general category of our budget includes the administrative budget activities, and those are organized in general. And the first column, as you can see, by those administrative accounts that apply to agency-wide activities, for example, our financial operations area that serves the entire department, our budget area that serves the entire department. And then each of the individual business areas or subject areas also have administrative appropriations that relate more directly to the particular programs that they manage. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have on that part of the budget structure. I think it's just useful to have a sense of that infrastructure or structure as we move into the budget overview. Madam Chair, if I might just take a moment to cover a couple of the charts that are also included in the materials immediately behind that page, starting on page A2. And some of this information will be talked about as well by Deputy Commissioner Christine Bronson as she does the agency overview. I just wanted to refer you to these charts that include on page A2 a chart delineating our portion of the human services portion of the all funds state budget, which is about 38% of the all funds state budget. And then in the general fund, human services is about 28% of the state budget at $32.5 billion. And again, these are base numbers without the governor's recommended change items. On the following page, you have similar information in the first chart showing the total all funds budget for the department in the base for 08-09 at $21.9 billion. And as you can see, healthcare and healthcare-related activities make up the majority of the department's budget. Programs like child support, child welfare, child care assistance actually make up a rather small portion in the larger scheme of the human services budget. The chart on the bottom of page A3 references the all funds base FTE count for the agency for 08-09. You can see that the majority of the staff in our agency are in the state operated services area, about 67%. Those are folks that provide mental health services and ICFMR waiver services directly to individuals served by state operated services, as well as individuals that serve folks who are committed to our programs for the mentally ill and dangerous and folks who are sex offenders. The second largest portion of our FTE count is in the healthcare management area at about 12% of our FTEs, and that area includes Minnesota Care Operations, which processes eligibility determinations for folks enrolled in that program, as well as MMIS claims processing, those are two of the larger areas in the healthcare management piece. And then the third largest area is Children and Economic Assistance Management at close to 10% of the FTEs, and that includes the largest chunk of staffing in that area includes child support enforcement and our MAXIS program, which processes the cash payments for individuals enrolled in MFIP, general assistance, et cetera. So that gives you some sense of where the staffing in our agency is placed. And then if I could maybe just suggest that we move ahead to page A6. Which at the beginning of that first chart shows the total all funds base administrative budget for the agency at $575 million for 2008 and 2009, and a general split among the funding sources for those FTEs. You can see that major systems is a large part of the work of our agency. We process a very large number of claims, and you'll get more detailed information about that process, manage many child support enforcement claims, and pay many cash payments to folks. And that's where a large part of the investment in human services administrative infrastructure is. And then the chart on the bottom shows the FTE counts for the agency in our central office, separate from state-operated services, so you can see what the funding stream is for those various staffing complements. And then the other piece that I wanted to point to are the charts that follow that beginning on page A7. One of the things that folks often hear is that human services is a very large agency And we have a very broad array of responsibilities of programs that we manage for a large number of people, and you'll again get more information about that as the budget review goes on. One of the things that I wanted to mention in this FTE chart is that from fiscal year 1995 through 2005, that decade, the human services staff complement actually went down over that period of time. It went down primarily because we had moved a number of folks in state-operated services into community placement with private providers, and we were able to reduce our staffing complement in that area of the budget over that period of time. At the same time, though, we had increasing pressures around Minnesota Care enrollment, child support enforcement cases, et cetera, where we did have some offsetting staffing increases over that period of time. As we look now going into beginning in fiscal year 2006, you can see by the chart that our staffing, our FTE complement, has begun to increase again. In fiscal year 2006, that's due primarily to a couple of factors. One of those includes staff from the Department of Education being moved to the Department of Human Services with the movement of child care and some other related programs, and I believe that was 70 FTEs. We also saw at that time an increase beginning in our staffing complement for state-operated services, reversing the earlier trend, but at this stage related more closely to increases in the number of people who are committed to state-operated services as mentally ill and dangerous or as a sex offender. And you see some continued then growth in our overall FTE count related primarily to those pressures as well as other pressures around caseload growth and increasing complexity in the program. For example, our licensing programs continue to have to manage an increasing number of programs with increasing complexity. We see increased numbers of administrative appeals and other sorts of administrative activities that are tied directly to caseload growth. So I just wanted to point that out in terms of big picture, and the charts behind that break out our FTE count by both central office and state-operated services. And one of the other things that you might notice as you look at central office, for example, is that we actually have had a lower number of general funded FTE positions, trying to use as our major systems part of our budget has grown, and as other funding sources have actually grown as a proportion of our budget, including healthcare access fund resources that support Minnesota Care operations. Unless there are any questions, I just would point out briefly what the remaining materials are in the green section, and then we'll move into the actual budget review. Behind that, on page A10, you'll find a chart identifying the federal poverty guidelines in various household sizes. Many of our programs have eligibility standards that are based on federal poverty guidelines, and this is here for your reference point as some of those discussions continue. The following page is a description of the SSI federal payment amounts. Many of the folks who are enrolled at our programs are SSI recipients, and occasionally income standards are tied to SSI, and so that, again, is there for your reference. The following series of pages include a chart that often I will point out specifically because I find it very helpful. On A12, a chart showing the various eligibility groups in our healthcare programs. As you proceed through this process, you'll learn, for many of you who already have been exposed to this, that there's a number of different categories of eligibility for different populations with different income standards, et cetera, and this gives you a good picture of how those sort of fit together in our eligibility programs and what sources or what programs actually are eligible for federal match. The material following that include a description of coverage under each of those health care programs, as well as a list of Medicaid-related waivers that are used to get authority from the federal government to gain federal match for our medical assistance and Minnesota Care programs. And those, again, are there for your reference. Moving ahead to page A23 is a chart outlining for you cost of living adjustments in payments from our medical assistance program to providers of those programs since fiscal year 1996. And so that can give you a reference for historical changes in payment levels for those provider types, as well as for reference the CPI and employment cost index over that same time frame. The materials immediately behind that include fund balance statements for both TANF and Healthcare Access Fund related base with the base. These do not currently include the governor's recommendations, although that material is now available. And then the last document in the green section is a set of abbreviations and acronyms that are frequently used within our programs that you may find useful as we walk through the programs. And if there are any questions on the materials or...
are there any questions for Ms. Hardwick? Not at this time, I guess.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What I will do is turn it over to Christine Bronson, who is Deputy Commissioner of the agency, and I believe she will be starting on page 4 of the white materials. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Madam Chair and members. My name is Christine Bronson. I'm the Deputy Commissioner at DHS. And Jane is right. I will be starting on page 3 and 4 of your materials, the first white page in the book. The first page that you see is the transmittal letter that's a formal correspondence between the commissioner and the legislature presenting the human services portion of the governor's budget. You'll notice that the letter outlines the high-level budget figures for the agency, that the governor's budget proposes to spend $9.3 billion in general fund dollars and $12.9 billion in other funds in the upcoming biennium. This is a 14.4% increase over 06-07 for the programs outlined on the next pages. Page 4 of your materials gives the agency profile, which is the broadest overview of the work performed at the Department of Human Services. It begins with the agency's mission statement to help people meet their basic needs so they can live in dignity and achieve their highest potential. The rest of the narrative on this page describes Minnesota's three major health care programs, medical assistance, Minnesota Care, and general assistance, medical care. Outlines the major populations that are served through DHS's programs, including poor families, children in crisis, people with disabilities, seniors, and people who receive direct care services at our state-run facilities. It also describes the operations components of the agency, including fiscal relationships with 87 counties, 43,000 healthcare providers, and 26,000 licensed entities, as well as our five major systems that support management of programs and support our business partners as well. Page 6 gives the fiscal agency overview, outlining the highest level of three major funds, the General Fund, Healthcare Access Fund, and TANF Fund, and two minor funds, the Lottery Fund and Special Revenue Account. The last number on the page shows the agency's total 08-09 all funds budget, as recommended by the governor, at $22.2 billion, representing 34% of the state's total all funds budget for 08-09. The next pages, 8, 9, 10, and 11, are a catalog of the governor's recommended change items and correspond to the change pages distributed throughout the rest of the budget book. These will be individually reviewed by assistant commissioners before the committee in the coming weeks as instructed by the chair. Page 12 begins summary of the next layer of detail in the budget materials, the program level. The agency management program is comprised of four budget activities: financial operations, legal and regulatory operations, management operations, and technology operations. Together, these four operational areas are recommended to be funded at $143 million in the upcoming biennium. The corresponding highest level fiscal information is found on pages 13 and 14 of your book. I will describe the first of the four areas, financial operations, and then turn things over to Commissioner Wilkin, who has management responsibility for the other three. The financial operations area assures the fiscal integrity of Minnesota's human services programs, maintaining processes that adhere to state and federal law. The financial operations staff provide fiscal analysis, reporting, and documentation of financial transactions and program expenditures. It provides guidance, best practices training, and technical assistance to divisions throughout the agency, as well as to counties and business partners. Financial operations is a critical support function to all program activities managed and overseen by DHS. It ensures strong fiscal management of the agency's $22 billion biennial budget and reinforces a culture of fiscal prudence, practice, and management amongst DHS staff and the agency's partners. Some of the measures used to track the agency's performance are found on page 16 and 17, including a 98.6% grade on paying promptly and a 99% grade on handling receipt of payment within 24 hours. The cost of this particular activity is $11 million a year. Summary across all three major accounts is found on page 18. A breakdown of the allotment level detail for appropriated activities can be found on the yellow pages 18A and B, including funds for the Office of Management and Budget, financial operations staff, the reports and forecasting staff, and costs for necessary statewide systems such as MAPS and Semaphore. Finally, I'd like to turn your attention to page 35 in your materials, to the page entitled Revenue and Pass-Through Expend. This standard page was created several years ago as a way to avoid showing what appeared to be double counting of items on individual budget pages when money is received by the state and then passed on to another account or entity. For example, when the state receives a parental payment of child support, the payment is accounted for but immediately passed on to the family. In addition to receiving and documenting more than $4.5 billion a year in revenue, the agency handles about $1 billion as pass-through payments, and this page prevents these in-and-out transactions from skewing individual program areas and budget pages. It is a technical solution to what otherwise would be a confusing representation of accounts. And with that, I will turn your attention back to page 19. And if there are no questions, turn things over to Commissioner Wilkin for the three other areas of financial management.
Are there any questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon?
Madam Chair, I take it that we'll be going through the actual budget information at some later time.
Yes, we're going to go through the base budget first. Then we'll go through the changes to the base budget. So nobody gets confused. We're going to do the base budget first. Any other questions? Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Madam Chair, I'm Tim Wilkin. I'm the Assistant Commissioner at the Department of Human Services. And I'd like to turn members' attention to page 19. That begins our review of the legal and regulatory operations of the department. In legal and regulatory operations, we set the legal standards by which the agency operates and handles the clients of the department. Within this is included the appeals and regulatory function. This includes the fair hearings process and oversees agency contracts. This includes licenses with throughout the department when they're applied for or revoked. They'll do appeals for those, and they also deal with 2,000 contracts that the agency deals with over the course of the year. Also included in this area is a licensing area, and many of you will have contact with this area through institutions in your districts. This includes licensing of child care centers, foster care, group homes, adult foster care, and those type of entities. We also do background studies. And in 2006, we did 225,000 background studies. And that's up from about 162,000 from the prior year. Also, we do investigations of maltreatment of vulnerable adults and children. Those include handling all complaints. Then if they evolve to a field study or a field investigation and any maltreatment investigations. This area also includes kind of a consolidation of some of the oversight and compliance functions, basically the internal audit functions that look at the fiscal management and programmatic controls, the internal controls of the agency to make sure things are functioning according to policy. And they do audits and operational reviews as requested by management. They'll do audits including of counties or grantees, contractors, or vendors. There's a couple specific areas in this that are somewhat separate as required by federal law. One is the federal health care program audit and evaluation section. And what that does is mandated audits of MA and Minnesota Care to confirm proper eligibility is being adhered to. The other area is payment error rate measurement, or PERM section, and that's the MA and SCHIP claims and recipient eligibility determination. They see if we're if there's errors rates in those areas. Then if you skip to that, that's
Madam
it
Chair.
For legal and regulatory if there's questions in that area.
Madam Chair.
Senator Prettner-Solon.
May I ask a question before we move on of Assistant Commissioner Wilkins? 225,000 background checks a year seems awful high. Are there that many applicants for employment that annually?
Chair Berglund, Senator Solon, yes. I mean, we're getting more and more as the legislature and the federal government require us to do more background checks based on a lot of the sex offender legislation that you've seen in the past, and I think that's been driving a lot of the increase.
So, Madam Chair and Commissioner Wilkins, do you do annual reviews of those, or is it just upon an applicant who is applying for employment?
Senator, Jerry Kerber from our licensing department can probably get more specific on these questions. Jerry handles that area.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Jerry Kerber. I'm the director of the licensing division. And the background studies that we do in the Department of Human Services include those for Department of Health license programs, as well as some Department of Corrections license programs and unlicensed personal care provider organizations, so PCA services. So there's a lot of activity, a lot of different types of caregiving situations that come under our background study numbers that you're hearing about. But we do not do repeat studies on those. Those are new hires. Sometimes, of course, it's the same person we've studied before, as sometimes people are a little transient in their employment situations. But they are not repeat studies. And that's in contrast to you may hear about family child care providers or some foster care providers who are having repeat studies done by counties. In these numbers, it's a one-time study.
Thank you.
Could we just go back to page 18B for a minute? I don't know if that would, if you could answer this question, Commissioner Welkin, or if it would be Ms. Bronson.
She's here. Yes.
Could you, Ms. Bronson, just talk a little bit about the budget line on page 18B that is described as transfer for Washington office?
Yes, Madam Chair and members. This line item helps to fund the Minnesota Governor's office in Washington, D.C. There's the Hall of States is a building near the Capitol that houses many of the governors throughout the country's staffs out there. There's a staff office of 2 to 3 people at any given time. And this is a partial funding of that office. Other agencies are allocated responsibility for it as well.
And Ms. Bronson, how is the allocation determined?
Madam Chair, I would have to go back and find the allocation methodology to know.
Do you know what the total cost of that office is?
I do not, but we could certainly provide that to you. I know that the Department of Human Services pays a disproportionate share of it, largely because the Department of Human Services federal revenues are so considerable, and there are issues in Washington that are meaningful and have a significant impact on our particular areas of interest.
Well, I guess one could question whether we're getting our money's worth lately.
Yes. We actually, Madam Chair, we interact considerably with the D.C. office these days on Medicaid issues.
Then do you also want to just explain what the relocation resources is?
Madam Chair, that should actually read reallocation resources. And this is largely a transfer account. We use this to move resources between accounts. And it's right now you'll see that it's showing a deficit. This would represent a shortfall in our administrative budget right now that we'll need to fix internally. This is not part of any new budget request.
So when you say it's a fund that you move between accounts, could you just explain that a little more fully?
Well, when the agency's administrative resources need to be distributed to support priorities, if there are insufficient funds in accounts, we will reallocate those funds, and those are what we notify you of on an annual and quarterly basis when those funds are transferred, so that there's a transparency to the legislature about what funds have moved.
And so when you say you will need to fix this, when would you be fixing it?
Before the end of the fiscal year.
Okay, and will that be reported to us then before the end of the session?
Madam Chair, it will be reported to you, the transfers will be reported to you as they always are. We can certainly give you an update on it by the end of the fiscal year if you'd like us to specifically comment on this line item.
Well, it would seem to me that if you're moving money out of some of these other pages and onto this page to balance it, that then we wouldn't exactly have a true, accurate picture of some of the other pages.
Madam Chair, I think the best explanation I can offer is that the budget is always a point-in-time depiction of where how much money is in accounts, and as part of normal agency management and necessary flexibility to manage against priorities, we make these transactions regularly to keep the operations of the department going. And the quarterly reports are our standard way of communicating that to you.
Well, Ms. Bronson, this is showing for fiscal year 08 and 09, which we haven't completed yet. We haven't appropriated for yet.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So
you're right.
If it's a point in time, it's a point in time we haven't reached yet.
That's true. So we will need to solve for this during the 08-09 biennium. You're correct.
And when would we be getting that information as to how this item will be handled then?
Madam Chair, I don't think that there's a specific point in time, but as I said, we can certainly keep you up to date about how this line item changes over time.
Yeah, transfer funds.
I think that completes the questions that we had on this page. We can continue then.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I'd finished with the narrative description of the legal and regulatory operations. The financial pages are following that, page 22 and 23, followed by the account level allotments. If there's any questions on the legal regulatory area, I can answer those now.
Are there any questions on pages 22 or 23? Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, Commissioner, with respect to background checks, going back to that issue just briefly for a moment, because you don't do, you said, follow-up background checks, if someone who's been the subject of a background check has any kind of a criminal conviction, is that somehow reported to your agency, or is there an interface between your agency and...
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, Jerry Kerber again from DHS. Yes, what happens is anytime somebody is convicted of a new crime in Minnesota, the corrections agent or probation officer needs to determine if the person is employed and if so, where. And so there's a provision under statute that says that anytime they determine that this person with a new conviction is somehow affiliated with a list of types of services, including human services and health department and home care agencies, then they are required to report that information to our office on a form that we make available to them. So we get a number of those every year.
Madam Chair, could I ask
yes, Senator Olson.
Sometimes there are family members that are required to do background checks because they're, say, the spouse of someone who's a licensed foster parent. And I've known situations where those people have fallen through the cracks in terms of offenses they've committed. I wonder if it's possible just to do an interface, since all the public criminal information is available online now, if there couldn't be a program written or something that would automatically compare those convictions with people in your system and flag whenever there's a new conviction.
Madam Chair and Senator Olson, there's two points. First is the example you gave for foster care. You may recall earlier I mentioned that foster care background studies are repeated with the licensing cycle, so every 2 years. So that shouldn't be happening for foster care and family child care. But one of the exciting developments that the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension is working on is what they are calling a wrap back. And so they will... while somewhat controversial, I'm assuming they will keep a record of everybody who we have made a query on, and any time then that they get new criminal history on that person, they will notify us of that so that we can always remain current. With our background study system, we've got, we've done over 2 million background studies since we've begun, and we really don't know how many people are continuing on at their current employment. Or the employment that they were at when we did that study. And so we don't have a system where we can say who is working where. There are some technology solutions that we're looking at that will address that very thing, because we don't want to miss those people. You're right.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Let's move on then.
The next page we'll be discussing is page 28. This is the management operations. Management operations is actually pretty quick to describe, because these are the functions that are common to most any organization: the human resource function, the communications, equal opportunity, and affirmative action. One thing that might be a little more unique is we have our legislative relations in this area that helps coordinate the relationship and the communication between the department and the legislature. Following that on page 30 are the financials. Any questions on that area?
And we're supposed to be on a white page now.
The white page is okay. Page 28, 29, 30.
Are there any questions? I don't see any questions. Whoever's got a cell phone that's on, could you take it into the hallway, please? Continue.
Okay, Madam Chair, members, the final area is technology operations. And this area is responsible for the technology infrastructure of the department. As you might guess, it's a fairly robust need for a department this size.
Could you just... let us know what page you're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Page 31. It's the next white page. Gives the narrative overview, followed by page 34 that has some of the financials on it.
And is someone else going to do the agency management page?
That was, I'm sorry, what I had discussed previously was the agency management. That's the human resources and the affirmative action employment opportunity. And it's a fairly just the, kind of the common.
Well, I guess I thought we were on a previous page when you were talking. So
okay, my apologies.
Why don't we just give the members a chance to look through this page?
Sure.
And see if there are any questions.
What page are we on?
30A.
Chair?
Yes.
I don't know if this, last year when we wanted to make changes in the, and I don't know if this falls under technology, but when we wanted to make changes, being that the department was working on a program, it was going to cost so much because they were in the middle of getting this program underway. I'm just wondering if this program or this technology is up and running now. Do you know what I was talking about?
Are you talking about Health Match?
Yes.
No.
It's,
we're going
it's
to be
still
talking
not
about.
Up?
We're hopefully going to be talking with Commissioner Wilkin about Health Match before the day is over here, but I don't think we've gotten to it.
Madam Chair and Senator, you'll probably need to be talking to Brian Osberg about Health Match. The actual software, the programming of the specific systems are in kind of the silos of the different program areas. For instance, Brian Osberg, who handles our healthcare operations, handles the Health Match, and Chuck Johnson, who handles the child welfare services, will handle the child support enforcement type issues. What this area is the infrastructure that supports it, the kind of the hardware, if you will, infrastructure that supports all those programs.
Well, Madam Chair, I'm
Senator Coring.
Thank you. I would assume then, now that we have Commissioner Wilkin working at the department, that we'll be able to get Health Match up and running very quickly. I would be assured of that. I'm sure.
It's on the radar screen, Senator.
Okay, I hope so.
Well, I'm sorry if I misunderstood, Commissioner, but when you were hired, I was told by the Commissioner that that would be one of your prime responsibilities, was making sure that Health Match gets up and running.
Madam Chair, it's going to be part of the project, but what's directly under me is the infrastructure. But I hope to be involved in helping Health Match along, because I think we had probably the same issues when I was sitting at the table.
It's quite frustrating. For those of you who are new, Health Match is a computerized system of determining eligibility for programs. And because we are in the middle of constructing it now, any changes that are made to policy, if we wish to have them implemented before Health Match is up and running, which is quite elusive as to when that will be, we have to pay for manual workarounds of the system. And so anything that we didn't pay for a manual workaround in the last biennium is on hold because Health Match is not up and running yet. So I guess we'll be talking about it quite often, maybe every time we get to a different part of the book.
And Madam Senator Chair, Coring, I would look forward to that
discussion
very much so.
I'm sure we all will. Could you just talk a little bit about this PATHLOR administration line?
Madam Chair, this is for the employee development and training. It's, if I recall correctly, and maybe staff could correct me if I'm wrong, but This is kind of the human resource development, making sure people have the proper training, and this tracks that for the department. Getting nods.
That's correct.
And is it like a computer system, or is it actual hands-on training that takes place?
This is a computer system that tracks it, but Roger could help out with more specifics.
Madam Chair, Roger Yarsman, DHS. Correct. It's a combination of both staffing and actually online training. By and large, it's a computer system housed within our Human Resources Department, which is used to actually make available and identify training opportunities across the agency, track the training, coordinate with human resource plans, employee development plans. Basically, it's a management system for all of the agency training activities, and it is an agency-wide system.
Commissioner Wilkin, are all of the positions in the executive office filled?
Madam Chair, I'm not certain of that right now. I don't know of any that are open, but I want to check back with you just to make sure.
All right, so maybe we could get more detail on that, and also if we could get a breakdown of the 6.5 FTEs as to who, how many are communication coordination and how many are assistant commissioners, et cetera. Any other questions anyone has on this page? Okay, then we'll move on.
The next area is the technology operations, which we started to get into a bit. That's on page 31 for members' reference. The narrative continues through 33 with financial starting on page 34. And this is a very broad area of technology, that the infrastructure that supports the applications for each business unit. It also includes simple things like the telephone infrastructure, the building maintenance, the PC support for staff. Management services handles the plant management for the central offices, which include the three main offices and three smaller offices. They also handle telehealth. There's a lot of video conferencing capabilities, including things used for state-operated services to for the employed doctors to be able to communicate with people that are being provided services in more remote locations. We also have a pretty robust electronic document system. When the facility was moved from the 444 Lafayette building to the Cedar Avenue, the Elmer L. Anderson building, there was a lot of documentation that was scanned and just put in electronic form, and the paper was not moved. It was gotten rid of in favor of the electronic version. It's much like the private sector is moving to. There's just such a huge volume in the agency that it's much more efficient to go with the electronic version. And then the final area of that is the purchasing and property asset inventory. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to stand for those.
Commissioner Wilkin, do you know who the three FTEs are that are under legislative coordination?
I believe that would be Steve Barté, and I'm.
We're familiar with Steve. I'm not sure if we're.
I think it's probably an allocation of. It's not all two people. It's Steve Barté and his support staff.
Oh, so he has two support staff?
That's correct. I think they might be shared. We'll get more detail on that, because that might be shared support staff.
Okay, thank you. I just thought if there were more than Steve Barté, we should probably know who they are. Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair and Commissioner, I'm trying to understand a little bit more fully the healthcare access fund, and I'm noticing that the in terms of management operations and technology operations, that there are a number of items that are apparently funded through that healthcare access fund. And if I could just have a little bit more understanding of that, that'd be helpful.
Sure. Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, the basically what that is an allocation of resources like the technology and human resources that are allocated to each program. And you'll see that with different areas of the department, different business units are allocated costs as they're incurred. And our healthcare area with Minnesota Care is a big chunk of the department. And especially in the human resources area, we've had a lot of turnover, so there's a lot of need for human resources people in that. So they get allocated a proportion of the human resources cost to that area. That's why it's coming out of the healthcare access fund.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Sharon.
I'm hoping that it would be okay if you would say, if I could ask the speaker to repeat what you just said in another way so that I can understand or clarify for me that you're saying that the Healthcare Access Fund, because there's a lot of turnover in that area, for those who are trying to oversee that program or to manage that program, that the dollars that are being provided for people's health care access is being expended on managing an administrative system, and therefore the money, what I'm hearing, is not available for actual health care access to people?
Madam Chair, Senator, maybe I will put it in a different way and make it a little more understandable. It's not necessarily an increase in the turnover or turnover per se alone. Every area is allocated some of the administrative overhead, if you will. The human resources has it costs us a certain amount of money to provide the human resources for the department. Much of that is out of the general fund, but to the extent that the Minnesota Care program has need for human resources, they will be allocated those costs, and that part there will be coming from the healthcare access fund because that's what funds the whole program, be it the actual payments and the administration of the program, which is really primarily a lot of intake, the application processing, and the oversight.
Commissioner Wilkin, maybe we could just take a line item here and try to understand one line item, and that might help. Let's just take ITS operations, the second line on page 34A, and we see some general fund money here, and then we see healthcare access fund money. And it's described as architecture, engineering, and network operations, monitoring server and support, as well as email and help desk services. So, for instance, for fiscal 09, the projection is pretty low out of the general fund compared to the healthcare access fund. So maybe you could just explain to us why that would be.
Madam Chair, my understanding of your question is why are these amounts being allocated to the healthcare access fund? That would be basically their allocation of what the determination from our internal finance people, their allocation of what that area is costing the department to run. They have to allocate those costs out for the servers, the network, the architecture and engineering, and determine if that's a general fund cost or if it's Minnesota Care operations.
I understand that you have an allocation method. What I don't understand is why the healthcare access fund on this particular line would be for 09 practically all of the cost.
Oh, okay. There is a typo on the page that might put it in perspective somewhat. Under IT operations, if you look under the 09 for the general fund, that should not be $315,000. It should be $3,158,000. The 8 was dropped off.
So that was a good question.
That was, Madam Chair, that was a very good question.
I learned a lot from it, too, Madam Chair.
I would just say the chair is keeping the department on their toes. So.
And let's go down to OSP project management, which is apparently all coming out of the healthcare access fund.
Madam Chair, members, I'm told that basically in order to get a full understanding of this, you would have to look at the total allocation of all the line items here, and that would give you a better feel for what was allocated to from Healthcare Access Fund or from the general fund, that it's a little bit more of art how it's broken up in the line items. If you're interested in more detail of how it got into each line item, we can give you that, but overall, it's the IT costs are determined, what the overall IT costs are, what should be allocated to the general fund and what should be allocated to the healthcare access fund, and then there's a little more art that goes into which line item it's in, but we can provide that for you later if you would like further detail on each line item.
I guess we would. I don't understand what you just said to me, so.
Okay. We'll provide that.
Senator Lynch?
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioner. If I could just try to summarize, maybe. I think really the underlying question here is, at least from my perspective, is I'm very much interested in further understanding of those items that are being charged against the healthcare access fund, because I believe that that was an account that was set up for some very specific purposes, and I'm just trying to more fully understand that.
Madam Chair, Senator Lynch, and that's what we think they're being used for. It's for running in the healthcare access operations within the department. Running the healthcare access operations isn't just the writing the checks to the providers. It's also providing support, system support, and human resource support for those running the programs and making sure the programs run smoothly to serve our clients.
It doesn't seem like the healthcare access program, however, would be the only or even would at all be an agency-wide project.
And, Madam Chair, we can get some information for you to determine why those specific line items were allocated specifically to the Healthcare Access Fund.
Okay. We'll wait for that detail then. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, thank you. If I'm understanding, maybe I'm not understanding either, but I'm also trying to understand what it is you're saying, and it seems as though with these categories, you have some things that are entirely allocated to the general fund and other things that are entirely allocated to the healthcare access fund without breaking down between those categories how much might really relate to one versus the other. So is what you were saying that you just made a policy decision to put it in one, all in one category versus and then put something else all in another category versus really attempting to try to break them down between the two categories?
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, it's not really a policy decision. It's not never rose to the level of the policy decision makers. This is more a financial form of art that was determined by the financial analyst and how they allocate it out. That's why we need to go back and talk to the financial analysts who handle this particular area and determine what their methodology was.
Okay.
Madam Chair. But basically, that is what they did. I see some people behind you kind of nodding their head. So whatever level that decision was made, that's basically what happened?
Yeah. Yes.
Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Senator Scheer.
I am addressing this question to you, Madam Chair. Can I assume that if there are cuts to the budget for health care for this committee, from the general fund, that it might be something that's done internally to transfer money from the healthcare access fund, or transfer costs that typically would have been in the general fund into the healthcare access fund, and continue to carry out overall operations in that way.
Senator Sharon, this is an area that we do watch pretty carefully, and I think, for example, last year in the budget, there was a lot more of the health match system costs that were being allocated to the healthcare access fund than would have been their fair share. And when we find those things, we do try to correct them. But as I told you when we began this process, since I've been in the chair of this committee, all we have done is cut budgets. So we had a book that was probably twice as thick as this in 2003, just of change pages. So we never were able to do a base budget review. So we've only reviewed those things as it relates to the healthcare access fund. When the healthcare access program was first created, and then as change requests came forward. So some of these details may have changed since the program was first created, and that's one of the reasons that we're doing the base budget review this year. So if there are things like that happening, we could catch them.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Are there any other questions on this page? If you look on the next page, 34B, if you look under the lease costs, could you tell us what the overall lease cost is? Would we just add these numbers together to get the total lease, or?
I believe it. Madam Chair, I'm told that there are allocations elsewhere, so we'll have to get back to you on that question.
All right. Are there any other questions? Senator Lori?
I guess with the typo that's on the line that we were talking about, ITS operations, that would carry through down to the bottom line as well, correct, then? So it should be 23.
Yes, you're correct, Senator
Lori. On page 34B, so if we're correcting these, we should circle that in.
So just for the record, Commissioner Wilkin, could you read the correction?
Madam Chair, we'll get you a corrected page.
So okay. And while we're on that subject, members, when we finish today, all of you, including the staff, are to leave your books here. If you want to look at your book sometime, you can just come to my office. They're in the cart. But the reason we ask you to leave your books here is just for this very reason. We frequently have to remove pages and insert new pages, or put pages in that are change pages at the request of the governor's office. So if we don't have your book, it gets to be quite a mess down the road. So if you would please leave your books when you leave today. And we'll be getting a new page, as I understand it, for this. Shall we move on then?
Madam Chair, that's all that I have.
Okay. I guess that completes our work today. We didn't do a very good job of estimating our time, so hopefully we'll try and do better with that in the future so that we are using our time properly so that we aren't dragging this on longer than it needs to take.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
With that, the meeting will be adjourned. On Wednesday, we'll be taking up the agenda items that are listed at the bottom of your agenda.